Well, welcome to another Panthers pre-game podcast on Panthers Radio. We're going to look ahead to the weekend. What is the second of four back-to-back matches for the Panthers? Last weekend against Guildford, this weekend against Manchester, a midweek Christmas special against Sheffield, and then Coventry Blaze at New Year. I'm joined this week, got a big gang today, Jono Bullard, former Panthers netminder Dan Green, and MC Kenneth Feast. Hello, guys.
Hello. Evening, everyone.
Hello. Evening.
So where should we start? I think we start, and we'll start with you, Greeno. I know you guys talked in depth about the Guildford game after the game, obviously, but I just want to touch on that very briefly. There was so many good things about that game, wasn't there? A super goal for Joe Hazeldine, a belter for Jordan Kelsor, two assists for Logan Nielsen. We'll start with the sort of British feel about that game. Fabulous to see the British players making a massive input.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like you said, many, many positive things to touch on, but none more so than that, you know, British contingent. I think, you know, if you'd have said a few years ago, we'd be having, you know, Hazeldine scoring, Logan Nielsen assisting, Kelsall scoring, you know, all those guys have kind of, you know, come to the surface now. So, yeah, it was. I thought that line with Kels, Tyler Welsh and Logan was our best line. I think me and John, I said that a few times on commentary, that they were our best line all night. Joe kind of fit back in seamlessly, and obviously great goal for him. And yeah, for me, I just thought it was an all-round top to bottom, really good performance. But, you know, everybody stood out, but especially those British guys on the night were excellent.
Ken, real shame that they weren't able to go to Guildford with a full strength lineup again. I thought one of the massive bonuses about Saturday, apart from the things that Dan's already touched on, was they just rolled four good lines. And, you know, there may be many reasons for the loss in Guildford, but it won't have been helped by being short bench, then losing a player for being thrown out. It clear that, you know, Panthers showed against Guildford, didn't they? When they could roll those four lines, they did that effectively in the home game.
Yeah, and I think not being able to take Misho and obviously losing Ollie as well, they're players that are like, Misho, I think, just causes a lot of problems to other teams. His work rate's really high. I think he likes to talk and chirp a lot, and I think that gets under the skin of other teams, makes them make mistakes. I think he's a player that is a real vital part of the team in terms of the part that he plays. Then you can't replace Ollie's work rate either. It's so high and so intense. And yeah, those, you know, you're often distracted by the kind of the high scoring players, or, you know, these players that are the glue that hold it together are as important. And I think, yes, we missed them the following night when we went back down to Guildford.
And Jono, Rok Stojanovic, his figures are quite impressive in the league this season. He's played 11 games, won seven of them, a 2.36 goals against, 92.57 save percentage. He was obviously a stellar player for Sheffield Steelers when he played for them a couple of years ago. He's just now really starting to show. He's having more and more of those solid games, isn't he? And showing why he's one of the top netminders in the Elite League.
Without a doubt, he had a great game on Saturday, and that triple save that finished second in game of in save of the week. And we all thought it'd go to number one, but to be fair to Evan Veninger, the save he made in Belfast was absolutely unbelievable. So yeah, so Rock finishes number two, but he had a fantastic game. Great to see him get a shutout as well. His first one in competitive action, but yeah, he's been incredibly solid, and the figures that you've just mentioned there just show how solid he's been.
Yeah, he's in the top netminders, top two or three, three or four. The only player with 100% save percentage, Petr Cech, one shot, one save.
Well, I mean, that's the Premier League quality coming through, isn't it?
4 minutes, one shot, one save. So, yeah, no one comes close to those numbers than Petr Cech. But Matthew Greenfield numbers and Ben Baum's numbers, actually, to be fair, I mean, they are the only ones really in the 93s there. If you look at that, Greenfield and Baum's, I think, I mean, we'll touch on GB soon, but Greener, Bounds is clearly having a good year. That's good for GB, and Greenfield is showing that he's and he's getting a lot of minutes. He's got one of the most minutes in the Elite League this season. He's got already over 1,000. Sheffield are relying on him, but he's seemingly coming up to the bringing the goods up every night, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he came in last year and he was obviously excellent and one of the top goalers. And you know, it obviously wasn't a fluke and kind of a 1 year thing. He's been excellent. I think him and Rock, you know, right at the top there. But like you said, Bounty, it's we always like to see him do well. You know, it's great to see him have success. And like you said, hopefully he can continue that for GB. And obviously Jackson Whistle's been out injured for a little while, but it looks like he's back now. So, you know, hopefully he can get a decent amount of games in. I'm sure he'll obviously be on that GB squad for the qualifiers in February. So, yeah, hopefully he can kind of find his form and they'll have two top goalers.
Just touching on Tyler Bescarani, his save percentage is 89.63 as it stands. He's played 19 for the Giants this year, 110 and conceded 9. A save percentage under 90% is not something you'd expect. Last year, he got a 94.02 save percentage. He came back, didn't he? That was the pivotal moment for the Giants, you feel, last year, was getting Bescarani to come back. He played 18 times in the league. He got 4 shutouts and won 15 of his 18 games. 1.45 goals against and the 94.02. It's almost baffling I've not really studied Belfast well enough. It won't just be his fault. There'll be a whole culmination of matters. But those figures, the stark contrast, Greener, is a bit of a surprise when laid bare, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he's been, you know, for the last 2 or 3 years, he's been, I would say, you know, by far the number one goalie in the league, you know, winning trophies in the stats department. He's, like you said, probably the main reason they managed to secure that league title last year. I think as a whole, they've struggled a bit, you know, some injuries, obviously losing guys like Goodwin, Conway, which they're always going to lose their sort of big players after, you know, such good years. I just don't think they've quite found their feet yet. But I think they won both their games at the weekend. And obviously, Bescarani won both of them. I think he will get back to that form. But yeah, like you said, I think it's a bit of a culmination of, you know, he's maybe not quite at that level, but also maybe the team and maybe, you know, giving up a few more chances than usual. So, but I think as a whole that they'll find their feet and I'm sure he'll get back to his best sooner rather than later.
So a defeat, Jono, in Guildford. I didn't see it. I was on GB under 20s duty in Dumfries where GB, sadly, well, they were on course for a gold medal, but Korea came back and pipped them to that gold, and eventually GB finished with bronze because of Lithuania winning and they got the silver medal. So GB had a gallant bronze when they were so close to the gold. Former Panther players Archie Hazeldine and Jack Hopkins had stellar games, and they were two of the best players in the tournament for me. But Jono, Panthers went 2-0 up, and I saw that scoreline and was thought, oh, we're on for something here. What went wrong? Was it just short bodies and then obviously was it Hugo Wahr got thrown out, or was there, you know,
it was Matthew LeMay who got thrown out
from 2 foot.
It looked a very soft call, but actually I looked at the rules afterwards because I was really surprised it got called a slew foot, but I think the slew foot rules have been changed slightly or slightly reworded. So on the basis of that rewording, it was actually the right call, probably, but it still looked a bit... I thought 2 minutes at the most, so I was quite surprised when I saw Matthew LeMay being given a 5-plus game. But by the letter of the rule book, the officials were actually right with that one. So that put us on the back foot because you've got a 5-minute power play to defend. I think the big turning point was the fact that we went 2-0 up, and then I think 14 seconds later, Guildford got there first. And I think from there, Guildford were completely on top in the game. That was the big turning point. I think had they not scored so quickly, we probably, if we could have seen out the rest of the period with a 2-goal lead, we could probably have gone on and won the game. I think with Guildford getting that quick goal, that gave them a spark. They got another one not too long after that to bring it level, and then they got another one before the end of the period to go in with the lead. So that was a big turning point in the game. Having the lack of bodies wouldn't have helped, but after that first 40 minutes where we were on top and went 2-0 ahead, after that there was really only one team in it, sadly.
Ken, that was a long answer from Jono. I think you wanted to make a point, didn't you?
Yeah, I've forgotten it now, to be fair. No.
Jono, you answered too long.
I was just going to say, obviously, after the elation of Saturday night and the carrying that momentum into the game on Sunday, a few things for me. I mean, I was, there's no reflection, and but I was surprised that we didn't go with Rok Stojanovic. After he had such a solid game on the Saturday night, and you know, you think, you know, that's a big call. Then obviously I don't know if there were anything, you know, you don't know about injury concerns or anything like that, but assuming there wasn't and it was just a chance to rotate Robinson in, you think that's quite a big call to go with Robinson after Rock's had such a great night and he's hitting a sort of vein of form. And then I think, as Jono said, I watched the game. We had a fast start again, which was characteristic of what happened on Saturday night. And we were controlling and dictating the game rather than being reactive, which was good. I think the night before, one of the things we said on the podcast was, would the fact that we'd had, you know, two Brits and effectively scoring and the fourth line really weighing in, having a great game, would that spur our top line into action? It did. Nieminen scores a great opportunistic goal. Wah then pitches in. And like I say, 2-0 up, we're looking in control. Lalonde's goal was so... I mean, I don't want to say... I'm not a netminder. I've never played in nets. Dan, you know, you'd be better to judge on this, but from where he scored from, you're sort of thinking, did that then just affect the team confidence? You got to remember, this team has come back and they're playing. You know, let's not forget what happened not long ago, and the, you know, keeping that team together and keeping them in the zone mentally. A bit of, you know, I mean, they're not quite there, and it just felt like to me like it was almost like an exhale of confidence, and the confidence went, and that's what changed the game. I actually don't think we stopped competing. I think we were competing right until the end, and I don't think six unanswered goals was a reflection of the overall performance. It didn't help, obviously, losing LeMay. I have to say, when I watched that incident live, I was just fixated on, I thought it was an out. I thought they were calling it for an elbow, so I wasn't even looking at the slew foot. It was only when they did the replay later on during a break in play, and they sort of, and I thought, well, I deliberately wasn't looking at the elbow. I was just looking down. I thought, well, okay. I mean, it wasn't, to be fair, the TV angle wasn't the greatest angle for it because of where the boards were. The refs would have had a much better angle, but that doesn't help losing, you know, top player. And then obviously John Paradise got really, really, really upset about that and ends up getting chucked out, which again, for a kind of, that doesn't, I mean, you know, the referees, once someone's been chucked, there's nothing you can do about it. You might as well kind of get on with it. And I just felt it was maybe a lesson for, like a lesson learned around what you, yeah, the fact that, I don't know whether it's, you know, is there a feeling that around, can the netminder play too? I don't know. I just, those are my thoughts. And I went on way longer than Jono and way longer than, but I just wanted, those were some things I just wanted to get out there to discuss and debate. So I think that's what people are talking about. They're going to be talking about those decisions. Why, you know,
that answer was probably four times longer than Jono's, but should have timed it, mate. The netminding thing's one interesting, isn't it? Because it didn't work out. But if Robinson goes in the net that day and wins the game and Rock's fresh for another game, it's a good call. But, you know, no one will know. Would Panthers have... That's the thing, isn't it? Like, we can sit here and debate what we think, yeah? But we don't know. Rock plays that game, we could have lost 8-1. Rock plays that game, it could have been a shutout, 2-0. I think it's fascinating. You know, the coaching staff would have had that. Again, and like you, Ken, I don't know. Maybe Rock's got a knock and they're trying to manage it. Maybe,
yeah, exactly. You don't know.
Maybe it was a tactical call where it was like, you know, we think Robinson's up to it. I think it's a real fascinating one, isn't it? And as I say, you can't go back in time, so you don't know what might have happened. And yeah, I mean, it was just such a shame. What I kind of want to move on to now is you know, where do we sit with this team? I mean, it's skewed a bit I mean, I think we all will begrudgingly admit Sheffield are the best team in the league. On paper, they're the best team. We knew that very early on.
In reality, they're the best team as
well,
from what you've
seen. They're the best team. Everyone is playing catch up. But look, I don't know about you guys, but I want to win. I want us to win the league. I want us to win the playoffs. Yeah. That's what I want. Yeah. But even taking aside what happened with Adam, this is a team in transition. It's year one. Sheffield away, yeah. and Sheffield are way beyond that. And yeah, you can argue about we should have been here X many years ago, but we've not been for whatever reason. But this is another rebuild, and we're in year one. And I for one, am excited. And we've talked about this on previous podcasts. We have, for the first time in a few years, a core of players who you're already going, yep, you, yep, you, yep, you. And we've talked about those players on the podcast. So, you know, yes, we all want to win this year. That would be fabulous. But I think we have to be realistic and say, and I'm not saying we should accept losing, but we should accept that we may finish a few points. You know, if we're in this title race come March, but albeit it's a bit of a distance away, I think that's fabulous. It's, you know, for a team that's beginning a transition from where we were, I'm just stating the obvious, what these guys have gone through. It's a totally different matter. But again, as we've talked about many times, just I'm starry-eyed at them that they've managed to get back on the ice, the coaching staff, the off-ice staff, and be where they are. I don't know, you know, I'm kind of going on a bit now, you know, with my answer, but maybe go to you, Greeno, and kind of put that point to you. Do you know what I mean? Like taking aside the trauma of what they had to go through, that's one issue, but I think that's a very obvious issue. But I think the other issue of the fact that, like, how many new faces? Two imports came back, Anderson and Caruso, and what? One British player, Jordan Kelsall, you know, from last season. Obviously, there's familiar faces in Betteridge and Tetlow, and now, obviously, in Hazeldine, who's been here before. Nielsen knows this club inside out, of course. But do you not think that, like, you know, we should be wanting to win, but grateful for where we are, but be excited about the future?
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, it's the same in any sport. You know, you always want your team to win every week, win every trophy. But yeah, I think realistically, it's basically a complete brand new team and with a brand new coach who's never coached in this league before. But I think you're seeing lots of signs of, you know, the project, the 2-year plan, the 3-year plan. And yeah, you know, if we can finish personally, you know, people might disagree, but if we can finish in a decent league position, if we can finish in really good form, you know, heading into the playoffs, anything can happen. And then moving into next year, we've got a coach who's got a year under his belt. If we can retain, you know, however many of the imports we want, you know, 6, 7, 8 maybe, and obviously the Brits, then you build on it. You know, under Corey, that's always the way it was. We had consistency. We had pretty much the same Brits most of the years. We had 5 or 6 or 7 imports returning every year. And we just haven't had that in the last 5 years. Like we've hardly had any consistency. So, yeah, I would basically echo everything you said. You obviously want to win now, but I think realistically, you're, you know, you're sort of the Tetlow, the Ollie, the Logan, they're getting to a stage where they're, you know, really important parts of the team. If you can keep a really good nucleus of the imports for next year and then, you know, maybe upgrade, you know, a few here or there, I think we'll be, you don't want to just win for 1 year and that's it. You're trying to put something together where, like Belfast have done, you're winning and being competitive year in and year out. And I just think that takes time sometimes.
And Jono, I mean, Green has got a good point about that planning as well, because, you know, we speak to Jonathan Paraday in interviews a lot, and you know, something that struck me that he said, and on and off camera, where he's talked about next year, or the year after. It's very rare to hear a coach, to me, for a Panthers coach, sort of start to talk about the future plan. This league is very much, most teams, I feel like it's often about, you know, just this season. But Jonathan clearly has a thought going forward. And that, to me, is exciting to hear the coach say, well, actually, this is what I'm thinking about next season. So we're talking about the players that we're wanting to retain that we talked about on previous podcasts. But we clearly want to retain our coaching staff this season and going forward. And these coaches are already talking about their plans.
Yeah, without any shadow of doubt. Look, we've had rebuild after rebuild after rebuild, season after season. It's time that stopped now. It's time that we actually built a core. We built a foundation. And I fully believe that this is the coaching staff, and we've got players who we can build a real strong core around. I think it's imperative we keep the coaching staff certainly next season and hopefully beyond. And I think there's a lot of players in that squad who myself and I think a lot of other fans would be more than happy to bring back next season.
Ken, you're a hard taskmaster. You know, you'll say, you know, like could be more blunt than probably many. Is a third, fourth place finish acceptable? You know, what we're talking about, the rebuild, if get to the end of the season and finish third or fourth? Are you happy with that? I mean, like we say, you want to win, but is that okay?
So what I want, I suppose, is very clear. I want to see a team out there that gives 110% every night. And I think
you
for the first
time...
You can't
give more than 100%. In a long...
you can you give a...
You can't. You can only give 100%.
Okay, right. Okay, so you can give 100%. No, you can give 200%.
You can't give more.
Anyway, right. You can't give more than 100%. On the High Performance Podcast.
Oh. Anyway,
But what I'm saying is, there is what is so refreshing this season.
Yeah.
Is you've got coach and a team that are look like a team. They look like a unit. They're working as a unit.
Yep.
You've got a coach, you know, 2 minutes, five minutes, you know, 30 seconds in Jonathan's presence. And it, you know, you feel motivated. He's a motivating man. He's, you know, Kevin Moore, the same. You've got Rick Strachan. They all bring different qualities.
Can I just say quickly, I love it. Right. I love it when you sing to Jonathan. Sorry, carry on. But I love it when you sing to him.
Did you? Oh dear,
I saw that bit.
So what I'm saying is, you need. I'm not almost like forget where we finish. We want to finish as high up the table as we can, and the only objective in professional sport should be to win, and that is your objective. But I think the manner in how you go about it is so important, and this team never gives up. I've never seen, you know, they were still trying at 6-2 down in Guildford. They were still going, and we still were creating chances. Mm. And they had nobody had given up. So that is, for me, is a massive, massive positive. When you talk about then building on this year into next year, yes, I'd give my teeth just to have stability for the coaching staff to be able to learn the league, to be able to build, to be able to make changes, keep a core of players, keep that core of Brits and grow. That's what I want. Am I thinking that, you know, coach walks in, wins the league and we've got it all right on day one after another huge rebuild. No. And that's, I think, whilst that might be what everybody wants, it's like, you know, I want to see a Panthers team that works hard and competes and is entertaining. And actually, you know, I'm seeing that from my position, and it's the atmosphere inside the building says is a reflection of how this team are playing, and I, you know, that's what I want.
We're running out of time a bit here, but you know, this weekend, the second, as I said, of back to back Manchester, Greener, what, you know, we've touched on this before, you know. I can't remember our record in Manchester. I think our record against Manchester last year was pretty dire, wasn't it? Nearly in every game. I think if we won one of the, or two of the six, we were lucky. To go into Manchester, you've got to be able to work hard, and they do that. And I think we've been into Manchester twice this year, haven't we? Twice in the cup, and we lost. We won the first one, and we lost the second one. But this team will go into Manchester, and even though it's a tiny rink, and even though, you know, it will be a physical game, this team will go into Manchester and work hard. We know, and as Ken so eloquently put, this team will go anywhere, and it might not always win, but it will work hard.
Yeah, I think, you know, like Ken said, with a coach like Jonathan, you know, you don't really have a choice in that regard. They'll go in there, they'll give 100%, they'll block shots, they'll do everything they can to get that win. And, you know, a lot like we've all said, I think win or lose, as long as we're watching a team or, you know, being around a team every week that does that, you can't really argue. So, yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a tough rink. Manchester's got a decent team. But, yeah, they'll go in, like I said, work hard, do all those little things right and hopefully come out with a result.
And Jono, I mean, this will probably be the only pre-game podcast for a while because the game's just come thick and fast. So, double Sheffield, double Coventry. It'll be interesting to see what Panthers can do, because you see how poor Coventry were, 3 weeks ago? And I think the fans were turning on their team. What they put together now, 4 wins or something like that?
6 wins, I think it is now.
6 now, is it? Such is the closeness of this league.
They're up to third now. Yeah, they were bottom.
You go on a run, just put 4 games together and your league position changes.
Yeah. And that, I think this is the key. This is the real key to getting somewhere in this league, especially now where all the games are bunched together at Christmas and New Year. If we can get a run, if we've got six games left before the end of the year. If we can win 5 of those, we're looking at top 3.
It's just win all 6. Come on, boys.
Win or 6, yeah. I mean, we owe Sheffield some wins. It's about time we went and got a nice 4-point Christmas against that lot. That would be lovely. And also, if that does happen, think of the confidence that we'll put in the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed Sheffield they're making a signing tomorrow. When's this being recorded? What night are we? Tuesday? Yeah, Tuesday night. So we'll probably know by the time this podcast is out. Just finally, in other news, Greener, how do you feel to kind of be partly responsible for breaking half of Nottingham's hearts today?
I know. Do you know what? I didn't even know either. I saw something saying they were getting Nuno, and I was like, what does that mean? And it didn't even click. I hadn't seen all day that he'd been fired. So, yes, it's a bit sad, really. I mean, I think I obviously don't know much about like the Forest history with him or whatever, but it feels like everybody here loves him, and he was a real, like, just a hard-working, honest, you know, he sort of almost single-handedly got them up. So yeah, I mean, obviously I'm not a Forest fan, so I can't speak for, you know, Jono will obviously know better, but I feel like people will be quite disappointed he's gone, really. Like, he seemed really well liked, so
I see a lot of Jonathan and Cooper, very similar traits, very humble men.
On the sleeve, kind of players, coaches. Yeah. I mean, it's a tough one because I thought they would probably do a bit better. And again, you know, Jono will know a lot more than me on this, but, you know, they've had injuries. They've kind of stuttered a bit. And I think obviously there's been a bit more pressure on them this year to kind of you know, keep improving, which maybe is a bit unfair on them. But I mean, yeah, we'll see, I guess. But how do you guys feel about it?
Well, I mean, we ain't got long, but I'm devastated.
Yeah, I'm gutted.
Ken doesn't care, do you?
I, you know, I'm not hugely into football, but I think he really had an identity that resonated with the city of Nottingham. And he was obviously well-liked by the fan base, and he'd galvanised that kind of never-say-die attitude. And what he'd achieved in terms of getting Forest back into the Premier League, he'll be forever a legend, I think. And just sad to see what's happened.
And you make a good point, because you talk about an identity. And as I say, the similarity with what's going on at the Panthers in terms of Jonathan Paraday bringing the Panthers an identity. I know Omar Pasha has always talked about wanting an identity. And under Omar and Kevin and Rick, you can see that identity forming. So,
But just say, if there are any disenfranchised Forest fans that are boycotting the next few games, just come down, obviously, panthers.co.uk for your tickets against the Manchester Storm Saturday night, 7 o'clock, the only place to be.
That's why you're paid the big bucks. Anyway, thanks, guys. We're going to have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us. And as Ken said, get down to the Motorpoint Arena Saturday night. Great night if you want to watch ice hockey. You've never gone before. I'm not sure why these Forest fans will be tuning in, but you never know. We might just suddenly get the odd random one. But yeah, get yourself down to the Motorpoint Arena, and we'll see you soon.